Chapter 1. Holy Grail. Music and Influence. Kurt Cobain sold millions of albums, and the most obvious area where his impact can be quantified is in the music industry. During Kurt's lifetime, 4 official Nirvana albums were released, and since his death, there have been 6 outtake collections or live albums. Most estimates put total sales of those 10 releases at somewhere between 30 and 60 million copies. Sales of Nevermind by itself are 20 million worldwide by conservative estimates, and perhaps as high as 35 million, according to more generous estimates. With those figures, Nevermind would rank as the 25th best-selling album of all time. Nevermind was a remarkable album by any standard. But while most of the world probably heard the album fully for the first time on compact disc, maybe in their living rooms, I heard it initially in my car on a crappy cassette tape. Furthermore, my cassette was missing the first 6 seconds of Smells Like Teen Spirit. My tape started in the middle of Dave Grohl's first drum crash. It was abrupt, but a lot about Nevermind was abrupt. I first heard the album in late August 1991 in the parking lot of the Seattle Tower Record Store. It was hot, my windows were down, and I was cranking Nevermind loud enough that it drew attention. I didn't want attention. My copy was an illicit bootleg advance that had snuck out the back door, so to speak. I rolled my windows up and sweated in the rare Seattle heat, made steamier by the power of the music. My copy of the album had come from a friend who worked at Tower, and I had just picked it up before putting it into my car cassette deck. The original source of our leaked copy had dubbed it, incorrectly, Cutting Off the Start. All my close friends were music freaks, and we regularly traded with other collectors for live shows, outtakes, and early advance copies. We loved music more than anything in life, and we loved the hunt for unheard tunes, and Nevermind was juicy prey. Working in the press, I always got advance copies of albums, and in fact, my official advance of Nevermind would arrive a week later, but that August, I couldn't wait. There was much anticipation for Nevermind. The band's 1989 debut, Bleach, had established Nirvana as a band to watch. Bleach had sold around 30,000 copies, which made it a decent college radio hit. But it wasn't enough to earn the group riches or major fame. But Nirvana's live show had gotten better and better, making them stars in Seattle. Their 1990 Sliver single had convinced me that Kurt's songwriting had taken a major leap forward from Bleach. When they signed with DGC Geffen Records in early 1991, it was a huge local story because few sub-pop bands had made the move up the ladder to a major label. At the Rocket, we had been touting the Seattle music scene for years, but no local band had broken wide nationally since Heart. Nirvana seemed like our best bet. When I got the tape back to my office at the Rocket, I began dubbing cassettes of Nevermind for my friends. This was certainly illegal, but I justified that decision knowing that all my friends would buy the album when it officially came out on September 24th. That was almost a month away, and it would have been torture to wait. My advance cassette, with the clipped Teen Spirit, spread through Seattle like a fast-moving storm, and by week's end there were hundreds, if not thousands, of dubs. Sometime around 2004, after Kurt had been dead for a decade, I was with a friend at an open house in Tacoma, 30 miles south of Seattle. The house owner had a homemade cassette of Nevermind on the shelf, and it looked like my handwriting on the insert. When the listing agent wasn't looking, I put it into the stereo, hit play, and heard the telltale clipped Teen Spirit. My early advance tape had flown south. So much of the story of Nevermind and of Kurt Cobain has become apocryphal over the years, as his shadow has become bigger than life. Many pundits today suggest they knew in advance that Nevermind was going to be a monster hit. But none could truly have predicted the success it had. I certainly didn't have a clue. Listening to it that first time in the parking lot of Tower Records, I loved it, but I thought it too loud, too raw and edgy to be a mainstream smash. Teen Spirit blew me away, but I couldn't imagine, given where music had been the previous decade, that mainstream radio would play it.